You're listening to Wet Shaving Talk, powered by SharpAlgis.com, where we're dedicated to preserving the art and skill of classic shaving. I'm your host, Joe Burley, and today's May 29th, 2017. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone, and happy Monday to you all in this beautiful day in South Florida. Well, not really too beautiful down here. It's been raining like cats and dogs, basically, for the last 4 days. One thing we got going for us is not too hot, so I hope the weather is better where you're from or where you are right now than it is down here. Enough about the weather, though. Let's get on with the show. Let's talk about what's coming up on the show today. We're going to talk about honing a straight razor. We're going to talk about how to hone. We're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of honing, all that great stuff. We're also going to talk about, in our discussion of the week, flipping wet shaving gear. Is it right or wrong? We're going to talk about what flipping really does to the community. We're also going to talk about something very special. This is something I've been working on for a while, and I wanted to share with every single one of you. It's kind of the special within the special of the special month of straight razors, I guess. We're going to talk about 1700 shaving. We're going to talk about the stuff that they use, the products, and we're going to talk about several vendors that are still in business today that were established in the 1700s. So that's going to be really cool. Our vendor of the week, we will be having a special vendor of the week. I will not discuss it until we get to the end of the show. It's a special one. It's something that is very dear to me. It's one that you may not know of, actually, but it has been around longer than you know, put it that way. Okay, I'll just leave it at that. We'll get to it in a little bit. And we'll talk about what's coming up with the podcast. So without further ado, let's get on with the show. So we're going to discuss flipping wet shaving gear. Is it right or is it wrong? So when I say flipping, I mean purchasing merchandise at retail price and then reselling it for profit on secondary sites like the buy, sell, trade parts of forums, Facebook or something like that, or just, you know, word of mouth. And flipping is kind of like you flip a house. You buy it and you want to just sell it right away to make a profit. Is it right or is it wrong? Well, that depends on the person you talk to. The person selling it thinks it's right. The person who's making the item probably thinks it's wrong. So what does it do to the actual community itself? So, guys, this is something that's really dear to me. It's something that I've been seeing a lot, especially with shaving brushes and razors lately. And you see flipping. You see people trying to just make a quick buck. And you know what? It's fine. It's a free market, okay? You can do whatever you want. You can spy, sell things. Once you purchase something, it's yours, right? Unless it's like a copyright infringement, you can't really get in trouble for doing that. So, granted, there's really not much to do. There's no shaving police that's going to come out there and tell you to stop. But is it right or is it wrong? And I've said that, mentioned that several times. Let's talk about what makes it right. Okay, so you buy a razor that's very rare. You get in line for it, whatever, or you're the first guy to click on it or gal to click on it, and you get the razor. Say it's $100, right? You buy it for $100, and you know that everybody wants it. There's only 10 or 15 made at a time. Everybody's like, oh no, I want that. So you put it up for sale on the BST as soon as you get it for $500, and you sell it right away, right? Or you do a raffle or something like that, and you sell it right away. Right, and you make about $400 profit. What does that do for the community? Well, you just bought that item from the guy who made it, and he sees that you sell for $500. He sees the demand. They see the demand is insane for the product. Right. So, what would stop that vendor from making, you know, 20 or 30 on the next batch, or just keeping at 10 and just keep selling it so it keeps the hype going, right? Keeps the hype going. So what that does is it creates a hype. And the hype will keep the demand down because the person who's making, if it was me making something, I would be like, oh, okay, well, I want them to still go crazy over it. I'm not going to make as many next time, or I'll just keep it limited, or I'll just release 15 or 20 at a time and just keep doing it every couple days to keep the hype going. I want my brand it's a brand name. I want to establish a brand name. Okay, so that's one thing. So what you do is you create a demand that might be falsified, meaning the demand will not exceed the sales and the person will keep it that way. So they're looking at that and they're looking at this, and then what's the next step that's going to happen? Well, if I was that business owner and I had a razor or a soap or something like that, what's stopping me from raising the price? Because if they're going to buy it for $500 or $400 off somebody right away because they didn't have to wait in line, why should I sell it for $100, right? It's my business. It's my brand. This guy's making more profit than it even cost me to make it, and then my retail price. So why? What would stop me from doing it? So you'd see raised prices in the eventual. So you have one, falsified demand, right, or restricted demand, or restricted supply for the demand. I'm sorry, and then you're going to have higher prices because there's, and you know what? You cannot blame the artisan or the vendor for raising their price, because why not? The demand is there. People are going to pay it. Why should they pay it from somebody else? Second off, if you go to the vendor later on to try and buy something or ask for a favor, they may not be as quick to help you. Now, I'm not saying this is something that will happen every time. I don't know. I'm not a vendor. I don't own a business, a wet shaving business, and I don't sell a product. I just talk about it. But I could tell you this, that if it was me and somebody would then say, oh, can I get on the mailing list or can you help me out? I would probably tell them no, because you're buying my stuff to resell for profit. You don't want to be, you're not an affiliate of mine and you want me to put you on the list. No, you're not going to go on the list, or I can be selective with selling. So you get selective selling from flipping products. Another thing with flipping wet shaving gear is, I've seen, and this is something else that I see a lot on the forums and stuff, and just a lot of posts. Yo, you're doing such a great thing for the community and all that stuff. What are you doing for the community by buying and selling stuff? And I vouch for this guy. That's what you see every minute. The guy, or people justifying that, I'm not doing this and doing that online. First off, no one cares. Okay, guys, I'm going to be honest. No one really cares if you're going to go out there. And if second off, you're justifying what you're doing, or I'm really for the community and all that stuff. One, when there's money to be made, you're not, the community is, yeah, the community is important. And there are a lot of vendors out there that care, and a lot of people that do are there for you. But there's money involved, and there's always money in businesses. You cannot make people choose, if you know what I mean. So if you're affecting somebody's way of basically eating, they're going to vouch back, right? So I know I got a little bit off the path here, and I'm sorry. I'm going to go back on track here. But you have people saying, they're justifying what they're doing for the community. Well, what you're doing to the community by flipping products and have to justify it means you're probably doing something you shouldn't be doing, right? And first off, if I'm selling stuff or whatever I want, I don't care what anybody thinks. It's what I do. It's my money. It's my stuff, right? I don't have to justify anything. And then have people saying, I vouch for that guy. First off, who are you? I don't know who you are. Okay, and I bought stuff from him. He's a great person, right? Hey, great. You know what? That's great. And I'm sure you're doing a lot for the community. But you're not doing anything for the community by flipping items or buying items, selling it, and then going and calling up somebody else to buy it again. Now, there's no example in this. I've just seen a lot of this going on. And I could see from talking to some vendors and artisans, they get a lot of this. They actually have people that will buy something from them, sell it for more money, and then go ask and buy, not try and buy another one. And then sell it again. So it's like, okay, come on, guys. So what it does for the community is it actually hurts the community by allowing the person who's saving up their money or really wants to use it, who doesn't have maybe that $100 at the moment they're saving up for, and they want to buy that razor because they actually want to own it and hold on to it. You're stopping that person from buying it. And that person's voice may not be as loud as the person who's flipping, right? That person may just be quiet. That person may just be a lurker. That person might be, but they may really want one and they want to buy one. They're never going to have a chance to buy one at an affordable price or at the retail price because they're sold all over the place for well over retail. I can tell you right now that when I see a new item come out that's brand new, that's really cool, that everybody wants, I could tell you right now that within the day that they're delivered, there's three or four of them on eBay for three or four times the price. And that's just like not doing anything good for the community. That's just trying to profit. And you know what, guys? That's fine. Do whatever you want. But don't justify it online because it doesn't make you look better. All right? So, and this isn't a call out to anybody or anything like that. I'm just saying that I've seen this. I log onto some groups and stuff like that, and all I see is just this and this and that. I don't see anything about shaving anymore. I don't see anything about technique. I don't see any newbies asking for help. I just see everybody showing off their gear, and it's getting a little ridiculous. It's like, come on, guys, this is about wet shaving, not about who's got the most expensive handle or that stuff too. There's like, if you would go on the groups right now, you'd look and scroll down, you'd see nothing about technique or hey, I just bought this. Hey, can somebody help? Maybe one or two. You see that more on the forums, but a lot of the groups on Facebook and Reddit and stuff like that, it's just a show right now. And it's just, again, that's my rant. That's what's happening. So Flipping wet shaving gear, is it right or wrong? It's not right. It's not good. Again, it's free market. Do whatever you want. You can see, you could definitely tell that in my tone of voice that I'm not really a supporter of this. And but again, you know what I do, how I combat it. If you are somebody that doesn't want to see flipping wet shaving gear and doesn't support it, guess what? The best thing to do is just don't buy it. Don't give them. Don't comment. Let it play out, because nobody's gonna. If nobody buys it, then the price is gonna go down, right? Then they're not gonna do it anymore. So, granted, for all you flippers out there, listen, that's your thing. You go right ahead. I have no problem against it. I won't partake in it, but I wish you all the best of luck. And guys, if you have any comments, whether they be negative or positive about this segment today, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. You know, I'd really like to see some more. I've talked to a bunch of guys, especially some of my close friends online and in person about this, and we've a lot of people are just kind of afraid to say it, afraid to go out and say, hey, look, what are you doing? And I'm not, so that's why I'm doing it today. So flipping wet shaving gear, if you have any questions, comments, or if you want to talk about it, even, not publicly or anything like that, send me an email, joe.wetshavingnews@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you real soon. Trust me, we'll talk about it. Even if you want to talk on the phone or just through email, that's fine too. All right, guys, enough of all that stuff. Let's get in some really, really good, cool stuff now. All right, so we're going to talk about how to hone a straight razor. I do have some advice for honing a straight razor. First off, when you're learning to hone, it's important to gather all the materials you can. So you're going to want to buy, as much as I hate to say this, you're going to have to buy the whole set. You can't just buy one stone and then buy another stone later. As much as it, as expensive as this stuff can get, it's important that you have to have all the gear at once. All right. Two, it's important that there's a million different techniques. There's a million different stones to sit with one set of what you want to do. Like stay with one bevel setter, one mid stone, one finishing stone, and then move on. Norton makes a great set. You get the 1K, the 4, the two-sided 4K, 8K, and then you can get, a finisher like a Cotical, or you can get a 10K or something like that from another company. But just try and stick with just one series of stones. It can be different brands, but one series of stones to learn, because when you start getting different stones in it, all stones are different. Everything reacts differently. They use to require different techniques. So you want to really know how to learn how to sharpen a straight razor, hone a straight razor first, and then start getting into different things. Then you can start buying it and throwing in different stones into the mix. But really learn technique first, because that's something that it takes the longest to learn. Once you learn technique, you can learn on any stone. Anything that's put in front of you, you can hone a razor with it. It just might take a little longer. You might not get the most consistent results, but you can do it. So first step would be get the gear. Second step would be consistent with the gear. Don't switch it up. Just try the same method over and over again until you get it. One day you will. It'll click. Just like when you were learning those math problems in school, it just happens and you just get it. So another thing would be, this is more on honing, on getting your razor honed professionally. Make sure you do that first. Now, I don't recommend buying stones and a razor at the same time. I recommend just buying your first straight razor, right? Having it professionally honed, and then eventually just learning how to shave first and strop and all that stuff before you learn how to hone. So you want to learn how to shave and strop around the same time, right? Because that you have to strop every shave. That's just what it is. A honing, you can wait. You could send the honed razor out, because it is an expense. It's expensive to buy all those stones. And it's not as expensive to have it honed. You might spend $25, $30 to have it honed professionally, which is another thing we're going to talk about. You'll go online. Now, say you want to get your razor honed. If you go online, say, hey, I'm looking for somebody to hone my razor, right? I'm looking for a recommendation. I will bet you right now, if you do that, and somebody can test this theory, that 5 or 10 people are going to say, I'll hone your razor for free. Send it to me. And then you're going to have one guy say, oh, great, that's so nice of you and all that stuff. All right, one, unless it's a company that you know or somebody that's reputable, don't do it, okay? Because what you have is you got a bunch of guys that are learning how to hone, that just bought all the stones, thinking they can do anything, and they're going to grab your razor and hone it right away. The worst thing you want is somebody who's been wet shaving for 6 months or honing for a month or two to say they're a pro because they can hone one razor or two razors, and then they say they can hone yours, and then you get it back, and it's not professionally honed. So as much as it might not be expensive and it might not be cool, it's an expense. Find a reputable place that will hone your razor, because you will get a razor back that will be perfect. And that's something. So when you go online looking for, and you can email me anytime and I'll help you out with this. look for a reputable source that will hone it. May not be the cheapest alternative, but it's a lot better than just having, you know, anybody just say, hey, I'll hone your razor free, send it to this person, it comes back, and it's, you know, it's a kitchen knife. It's not sharp enough because this person said, and nothing against that person because they're trying and they're learning. But not everybody, but honing is not something you can learn right away. So yeah, I would definitely recommend going to an actual service. So in addition to all this talk about honing, I did make two guides of honing that kind of explains all this. It shows you all of the different stones and how they work and how to act, all the techniques and different methods on how to hone a straight razor. I did it on Sharpologist last year, so I linked up to the show notes here, both guides. So if you want to check it out, there's a lot of pictures and stuff. They're really in depth. They took me about 3 months to write, but they are very detailed and they do work. I also included a short video on how to touch up your straight razor with a barber's hone. Now, I know it's not honing per se. It's just basically sharp, you know, basically touch-ups, but the technique is there. So, I mean, you can watch on technique and stuff like that. And if you have any questions, I'll do, you know, a video for you and send it to you as well. Or you could just check out, like, you have, like, guys like Lynn Abrams and GS6 Gun that have been doing this stuff for, you know, for years and have honed thousands of razors. They have tons of videos online, too. Watch them. Those guys really know what they're doing. And, you know, if you have any questions, you could probably email them, too, and I'm sure they'll get back to you, you know, as soon as possible. So, when learning to hone a razor, remember that buy all the gear when it's time to do it. You have to get all the stuff. Stick to the same amount of gear. When you're looking for recommendations of honing, stick with reputable honing sources, okay, and get all the information you can possible. So that's the four steps of learning how to hone, which we actually just came up with just now on the show. So isn't that cool? All right. So any questions, you can always email me at any time, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. All right, guys. So we have a special, special in the special, basically. So to cap off Straight Razor Month, I wanted to talk about something really cool that's dear to me. The Guide to 1700 Shaving. That's something that I came up with that I compiled last year. It took me a very, very long time to find some of this information, but it's something that's dear to me. See, I'm a 1700s, 18th century junkie. I love information. I research a lot on their lifestyles, on stuff that was made, products, all that good stuff. So I just really wanted to compile it. But when you Google, and you Google 1700 shaving, there's not much to coming up. You have a couple groups. You have one group on Straight Razor Place that's dedicated to it, the 1700 show. And there's a couple other groups out there too. There may be a couple threads and stuff like that. But not much out there. So what I wanted to do is compile it all into one and make a post. And I did that. And feel free to, you know, let me know what you think about it. But the 1700s was a time that was very monumental for the development of wet shaving. And especially straight razors. Because you had the invention of cast steel by Benjamin Huntsman back in the 1740s, okay, which made straight razors last longer. They basically were sharper. The edges were harder the way the steel was, and they lasted longer. It wasn't as soft as steel, and that's what really led to the straight razor of today. And you still, what's really cool about straight razors of the 1700s, most of them were wedges, but they started getting into hollow grinding. So for a long time, I thought that was all wedge blades throughout the century, but I found out recently by doing some research that there were some pictures of some hollow ground razors back in the 1700s and some books that had it. So where did that come from? So hollow grinding was probably around. I don't think it was limited. And you never know because most of these razors are handmade. I'd say all of them are handmade and were made by a certain maker. So, you know, you'll see that too. I'm still working on that part of it. I'm going to see if I can find anything and get back to everybody on that later, but that's something that might be on a later date. So on the actual 1700s guide, there are still 9 companies in business today that were from the 1700s, that were in business then in the 18th century. And if you want to take a look, I linked up all of them. There are many, many popular names out there. You have like D.R. Harris and Company. They were established in 1790. You have Caswell Macy. They were established in 1752, although they've changed names several times. The old number 6 was George Washington's favorite scent. It is proven. You have a couple of companies like Pearl Soap. Pearl Soap's been around. It's 1790. They've been around for a long time. You have Farina and Flores Perfumers. You know, Farina Perfumes, 1709, I'm sorry, in Germany. That's the world's oldest cologne factory still in business. Still family run. And they still make some really good stuff too. So check out that, guys. I linked it up to the show notes. And there's also some really cool books and stuff online that are free on Google Books. I also linked up to as well that you could take a look and from the 1700s as well. So, I mean, this is a time that's really dear to me. You know, you had shaving brushes came onto the – it really is unknown when shaving brushes really came onto the into the mix of wet shaving, because at first in the 1600s, really there weren't many brushes. I'd say people would just take a cloth and use it on a regular soap. And the way the soaps were made in the colonies, it was a big difference. I mean, the soaps you had in Europe were, you know, made – they've been making soaps forever. You go in the colonies and they're making it with animal fat left over from their cooking – from their daily cooking, and they're using lye from wood ash because they have no real choice. It's waiting 6 months to get soap at a premium, or making it yourself in, you know, a matter of 3 weeks. You know, that's just something else. So all in this article, I did work it out and just made it really easy to read and everything. If you want to take a look at it, if you're really interested in history of 1700s, it's something I love to talk about. So contact me if you have any questions, or if you know anything else about it I'd like to add to this actual guide, please let me know. I've been traveling, and I usually look for them. I did find several. I do own three razors from that time span, and I do use one of them. And I actually linked up to a video of me shaving with one of my favorite razors of all time. And if you want to look at that, it's also in the show notes as well. And that's shaving with an actual razor, confirmed 1700s with the maker and everything like that. I'll also be doing some more content on that razor and that company in the near future as well. So check it out, guys. The Guide to 18th Century Shaving. All right, now our vendor of the week is something that's another vendor is very dear to me, that makes history look like, well, history is just a little bit longer. The Gilded Hand is our vendor of the week, and they are the world's oldest wet shaving company that is still in business. They've been serving the community for a mere 460 years. That's right, they've been serving the community for 460 years. Established in 1554 and still in business today. They make soaps, aftershaves, and a lot of cool stuff. I do own a lot of their products. I would say that they're more of the citrusy scent, more of the old style soap making. So if you want something very interesting, check it out. West Coast Shaving does sell their products in the United States if you're here. So that's basically one of the only vendors that has it. And let me tell you something, it will not break the bank. These items are actually very affordable too. So check them out. The Gilded Hand. It's a company that's been, like I said, been in business for 460 plus years, actually 463 years to be exact, and it's just really, really, really awesome. I mean, I know their website's a little bit hard to read if you go on there, but it is in English, and it's just I've used this stuff many times. You can't, it's like there's no words for it. You've been in business for that long. I mean, obviously, you know what you're doing. Now, it did change hands over several times, but it's still the same family that's still running it since it was founded in the year 1554. The same family, which there's a lot of things with new competitors and stuff. It did switch hands over a lot. And again, there's not much, because I did contact the company and they told me a mere amount of their history, but they don't really have too much written history from the 1500s. But it did switch over in 1609 where it was purchased from somebody else and switched over. So I think it's been in business. I if you have any more information, I'm going to find out. But since 1609, it's been from the same ownership. And it's been survived since then. And they actually changed the name several times as well over the years. So, yeah, I'm just reading over some information right now on it. It was switched over in 1609, but still, the original business, 1554. So if you think you've known any long-term companies, this is a company to find out success. When you've been making soap for that long, you got to be doing something right. Right, guys? So if you're interested, check it out. I also let another little article linked up to the show notes as well if you want to check out some of their information. But really, really cool stuff. And that's why, Gilded Hand, you are the vendor of the week, because you have been doing this for several lifetimes and will probably be doing this for several lifetimes more. So thank you for everything that you do, Gilded Hand. And guys, again, if you're interested, check it out. So what's up with the cast? What's going on with the podcast? So guys, I'm looking for some sponsors because I'd like to do some giveaways and stuff like that. Also, as the community grows, I've realized, I talked about this last week as well, I realized that it's time to upgrade our podcast and start doing some different stuff, product technology and time and graphics and stuff like that. But this stuff costs money and I need some vendors or some people that are interested in advertising or sponsoring an episode in order to move on basically with the podcast and get us to expand a little bit here. So if you're interested, it's simple as much as just doing a giveaway. You want to provide something for a giveaway, or if you want to sponsor an episode or something like that, contact me, joe.whatshippingnews@gmail.com, and we'll talk about it, and we'll get you going on that. So what's in store for the podcast? We're going to talk about what's going on in the wet shaving world. Summertime shaves product and gear. Yep, summertime's coming. It's right around the corner. We're going to talk about some gear, some stuff coming out, some different types of how people switch from their fall spring stuff to their fall spring. I'm sorry, from their spring from their winter to spring gear to their summer gear, and we'll talk about that. Well, traveling do's and don'ts. Summertime means a lot of traveling for you out there, for everyone. And we're going to talk about what to do and what to bring, what not to bring, what will get confiscated on a plane, and what will pass through it. So we'll talk about that one in the future. Guys, our show is powered by Sharpologist.com, what your father didn't teach you about shaving. Special thanks to Mark, a.k.a. Mantic59, for letting us use his platform and everything that he does for the community. And most of all, you guys, the listeners, because without you, it would be no podcast. Don't forget to check out my blog site, ShaveStraightAndSafe.com, for tips and interesting wet shaving stories. And feel free to contact me at any time at joe.whatshavingnews@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel here for videos regarding some interesting wet shaving content and stories. If you're interested in sponsoring an episode, contact me as well, guys. And as always, if you're a vendor and you'd like to be featured, please, 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 all you got to do is just send me an email. All right, our next show will be the 12th of June. I look forward to seeing you then. Until then, shave straight and shave safe, everyone. Bye-bye now.